is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builders Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Afternoon. Thanks for being here today. Getting ready for the weekend. The home show going on at the fairgrounds till 7 tonight, Saturday and Sunday as well. And legislators meeting with the Oregon State Legislature. Floyd Przanski on with us now. Floyd, are you in Salem today or are you elsewhere?
No, Carl. I'm back in district in Eugene at my home slash district office. Fridays are pretty much limited to ways and means activities. We were up there yesterday and Wednesday doing floor sessions. So this was the first week that we actually had two floor session days back-to-back.
So just getting the word a few minutes ago, and to be fair, both you and I are kind of digesting this at the same time, but the governor making an announcement a few minutes ago, issuing an executive order to return Oregon public school students to classrooms. All districts required to offer universal access to in-person instruction on or before the weeks of March 29th for K-5, that'd be right after spring break, or April 19th for 6-12. What's your initial reaction?
Well, I think it's good that we're maybe reached that plateau or that arena that we can actually be having these discussions. I'm hoping that as much as we want everyone to get back to the norm as quick as possible, that we're not pushing it to the point of where we're going to have unintended consequences. All of the educators that have been going through the vaccine process, I'm not the one to make a determination as to when all of the vaccines are in effect, meaning you've got your immunity and tolerance, but I know that was one of the reasons that she moved educators up in the line, as some people would say, so we could, in fact, prepare for this. So it's exciting in one way, and then at the same time, it's one of those issues that we hope we don't have unintended consequences that cause counties to come back, say, out of compliance, but having much higher reporting of infection.
And the release says all but six counties now meet or exceed the advisory metrics for return to in-person hybrid learning for all K-12 grade levels. And the governor said five of those counties meet the advisory metrics for return to elementary school. So we'll see how all this siphons out. It looks like that if you're a higher, probably the extreme risk level, that might be still under the hybrid plan. And so we'll see how this all shakes out over the weekend, see what some of the reaction is. But just ahead, a couple of weeks ahead of spring break, kind of a big announcement there.
It really is. And I guess it's trying to get the districts and the individual schools ready to do what they need to do under this order. There is some other unanswered questions, and that is if a county does, in fact, go and slip up into the higher extreme categories, what does that mean for the schools that have reopened up? Are we going to, quote unquote, shut them back down?
Interesting. So we'll see what comes out on that. Education has certainly been one of the biggest controversies during the pandemic about how you do things, about certainly with the order the vaccine is being distributed in and things like that. What types of things have you been hearing from constituents in your district?
Well, I think the issue that for many people is being able to get the shot or the vaccines for themselves. And one thing I will mention, my newsletter for this month is going to be coming out today or tomorrow. We're putting the final touches on it. A lot of people are under the assumption, I believe, that if you signed up and register at the county level, that gets you on to all these other registries, which it doesn't. And when I say other registries, I'm talking about private pharmacies. And so myself, I qualified as of this week to be able to get shots, and I went online and used the Safeway Albertsons or Albertsons Safeway registry and was able to get in and get my first shot yesterday and have my next one, the second one, 28 days or whatever amount of time out since then that I was able to get that lined up. But the point for me, for the listeners, is that if you're interested in getting your shots and you're not being able to get them through the county process, go to some of the private pharmacies, such as I said, Albertsons, Safeway have them. Bi-Mart, my understanding, is getting ready to kick in. Costco, Walmart, Walgreens, and then there's some other private pharmacies that are also offering this. So I do think with the Johnson & Johnson vaccine coming up, and my understanding, it's already been distributed, at least the doses that came into Oregon, to different locations where I got mine yesterday. They said they actually had Johnson & Johnson there on site, but they were not authorized to start. And I think they're going to try to start them today or over this weekend.
Interesting. Well, a lot to deal with as we're in this, basically the just about the one-year anniversary actually will be Sunday when we had the executive order of the state of emergency from the governor. So we're right there at the one-year point.
Yeah, we are. And I think a lot of people, including myself, thought we would be further down the road in having this more under control prior to now. But at the same time, we have to keep in mind, I mean, we are talking about a pandemic. We are talking about something that we were not able to respond to immediately. And I do take my hat off to science and to those researchers who were, in fact, able to come up with vaccines in less than a year. And now having basically three that are ready and have been approved for emergency use, we are hearing, at least on the national level, the ability to be able to get everyone vaccinated who wants to be vaccinated by the end of May. And that's just kind of phenomenal from my perspective that once we got to this point, we're now seeing it kick into a much higher speed and frequency of delivery.
So what are some of the things that you have been working on this week as a state senator?
Well, our committees continue to meet. Even though we're not in the building, we're doing a lot of virtual meetings. All of our meetings for hearings are done virtually. Also, any of our office meetings are done either the old traditional way by phone, because we can't be face-to-face, or we're doing some type of virtual meetings as well. So that takes a lot of time. This morning I started at 8 o'clock and my was going every 15 to 30 minutes from 8 o'clock until noon. And so I have a couple more this afternoon. We had, like I said, the floor on Wednesday and Thursday of this week. Wednesday was only a procedural move to have the bills that were needing to be first read being introduced into the legislature were read into the record, and those who had gone to committee had been voted out of the committee, coming back for what is our final reading, the third reading, had their second reading on Wednesday. And then yesterday we actually had our first set of bills. I believe we had eight Senate bills that were voted on and approved by the legislature, and we had virtually everyone was there with the exception of three members that had been excused. Clearly, because of the distance many have to travel, there are accommodations for those individuals not needing to travel 250 miles for 2 or 3 hours and then turn around and go back home. And so we're trying to accommodate for on that scale as well. But I carried my first bill yesterday dealing with the judicial marshals. So this is basically the police force, quote-unquote, for the judicial department, which are our courts. We only have three judicial marshals that are basically in charge of not only providing security for the appellate courts that are located in Salem, but also coordinating across the state with all of the other circuit courts and helping and manage and facilitate security in those facilities as well. And this bill basically is going to allow those individuals to have the benefit that many of them already had as a police officer, a sworn officer in a different department, to be able to still have the same benefits under the PERS program for those individuals that are sworn police officers. And so this is kind of like tidying up something that we actually had ready to go and actually went all the way last session with the unfortunate of not once it passed the Senate, went to the House, got out of the House committee, but unfortunately with the lack of a quorum, was not able to be voted on last year. And so we got that one out yesterday, and I expect that it will make it through the process this time. And that way, those three individuals will still retain what they've already acquired from their work as sworn officers in other departments, and they don't lose that benefit because they've taken a job as a judicial marshal.
Now, as they're working with coordinating with these folks around the state, it would seem that court security is probably of increased importance with all the things that you've, basically all the hoops you've got to jump through to with court procedures right now.
And very true, very true. And it is one of those issues of how you coordinate and realizing that with the courts, for the most part, being shut down for civil actions and remedies and really focused on the criminal side because of the constitutional protections of people charged with crimes, it really does, I think, put a kink in a lot of people's ability to get redress through the courts. And also, I think, for the security teams, how they are trying to respond to people who are, let's say, very frustrated with the system not being able to schedule court hearings and stuff. So one of the things I've always admired by the individuals that fill those type of positions, their ability to really work with individuals on a one-to-one basis that are very emotional, but at the same time needing to be heard. And really, that's one of the things I think they actually do well, and they don't have to result on, traditional law enforcement means.
How has the pandemic affected your work, not as a legislator, but as a prosecutor?
Well, it's interesting because, as you know, during the session, I subcontract my work out under my primary contract, and then the other two just basically don't write me into the schedule when I'm not available. But all of the courts that I work for have limited arrangements with the exception of Florence. They have gone back to basically a full-time court as it has been in the past. There were 14 weeks where we did not have any court, and so a lot of things got backed up, and so we're trying to work through a lot of that. I still monitor it since it is my contract, and working with the individual that is substituted in for me in their law firm to ensure that my client has all of the resources they need and we go forward. But you could imagine for trials, we cannot have a traditional trial in the courtroom that we normally use because of the limitations in size and the inability to socially distance. So prior to the end of last year, we went over to the Florence Event Center and looked at how their arrangements was, and we've determined that we could, in fact, have trials at that location. It's a very large venue. They have breakout rooms where you have collapsible walls that you can either close out or open up to give you more space. And so we do have the ability now to get back to doing jury trials when they are required.
All right, going to take a break. Back in a minute with State Senator Floyd Prezansky. The interview, a podcast after one at 541radio.com, 1248 at News Radio 1240, KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1250. Lars Larson coming at 1. America Changed Forever with Gil Gross and CBS Audio on the way this afternoon at 4. And remember, you can see the Roseburg Boys soccer games streamed tonight since no spectators are in the stadium. Both the JV and the varsity games streamed at 541radio.com. State Senator Floyd Prezansky with us in district in Eugene this afternoon. And as we're going through the session, how do you feel like the relationships between the Democrats and the Republicans, how's that going?
It's rocky. I mean, that's the best I can say. Fortunately, I think there's a number of us on both sides of the aisle trying to keep everything together and work for the betterment of all of Oregonians. But, you know, there are individuals who have a completely different perspective. And, I will say that some are voting no just because their principal feels that, that without the public actually being able to physically be in the building, that they should be registering protest votes. yesterday because of some of those positions that have been taken in committee. I was interested to see how individuals would actually vote on the merits of the bill when it got to the floor. And at least one of my colleagues, Republican, who's been voting traditionally no in committee, voted affirmatively for the bills and putting on the record why they had chose to vote no in committee, but that at this point they were registering a vote on the merits, even though they still had concerns and issues with the order basically not allowing people into the Capitol because of the inability to socially distance and make certain that it's safe for not only those coming to the Capitol, but those who work in the Capitol, the staff, et cetera.
How are we doing on just in terms of timelines? We're into early March. You have until, is it early July to be done?
We will, yeah, the 160 days will run it toward the very end of June. We do have deadlines that are internal deadlines. They're publicly known if you go online and look for that information. But our next major deadline we have is what's called posting. And that means that you have to have any bills that are in a committee that you want to continue to work has to be posted for a work session. Work session happens after your public hearing. That is when the merits of the bills are debated and you vote up or down if you're wanting to have the bill move forward. That posting deadline is March 19th. So it's around the corner, another about 10 days or so. And at that point, you will see where committees will have cut out a lot of, potentially have cut out a lot of bills that are in their committee that are not going to be able to be accommodated or reviewed or considered during this session. Now, there is a means that you can actually post before that date, not only the work session, but let's say it hasn't had a public hearing. So I, then judiciary, could in fact have something posted for the week of the after the 19th. So let's say that'd be the week of the 21st, I believe, for both public hearing and a work session. And even though it hasn't been heard in front of the committee before that posting deadline, you're still free to work those bills, but you do have an absolute deadline of April 13th, if I'm not mistaken, to have any bill in a committee out of the committee, meaning it has to be voted out of the committee at that point for it to continue. As you know, Carl, this process is bifurcated, meaning you have a House and you have a Senate. And so whatever happens on either chamber, if it makes it through and passes that chamber's floor, it almost always has to go to the House, to the opposite committee, chamber, for them to start the whole process over. So that's why you have these deadlines to try to give some equity of getting stuff in. Now, there is the exception where if it's something that's going to cost the state money to implement, if it hits a threshold of, I'm going to say, $50,000 or more, it goes to our Ways and Means Committee. So it can bypass the other House chamber and go to the Ways and Means Committee and then come out and be voted directly on the floor on both chambers.
What about the issue of taxation of some of these federal benefits for COVID-19? I know Congressman DeFazio called on the governor and lawmakers last week to address that issue. I believe there was a bill that came from the House Republican side earlier this week. But we're already in a tax cycle. How's this going to play out?
Well, I don't know exactly how it's going to play out as to whether there will be a tax on it or not. That is a question that still the bean counters and everyone is looking at. And I think also policy-wise, what's the best and how can we ensure recovery for everyone or the bulk of individuals? So it is an open question, but clearly with us having taxes being prepared now, that in itself should not be determinative of what decision we make as on a policy level, because we can always have adjustments and corrections made to people's income tax after the fact. So I'm not sure exactly where those committee or those bills are going into a committee process for that open debate and discussion, but I do think it's really noteworthy for us to be looking at those issues and taking in all perspectives that people bring to the table.
And it would seem like if something does get through to address that, because people are already filing or have already filed in some cases, that this is going to be a matter of reimbursing people later, perhaps much like the kicker has done.
I don't know exactly how that would all play out, but yes, I agree with that, and it would more than likely, because if those revenues have already been collected, then there would definitely need to be that reimbursement.
All right, just about out of time. Final thoughts heading into the weekend.
Well, I hope everyone does well. This weather's kind of getting back to somewhat of a norm for us in Western Oregon. I understand we're going to have some sunny days and some rainy days. So hopefully everyone will be able to get out and enjoy this beginning of summer or spring.
All right, State Senator Floyd Przanski, thanks for being on this afternoon.
Kyle, thank you very much. Have a good day.
1257 at News Radio 1240, KQEN.
You've been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN, a daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications, your home for Douglas County's news team. News Radio 1240 KQEN.